My name is Noel Joseph Terence Montgomery Needham. I'm from Great Britain. My Chinese name is Li Yue Sir. I have been to China 9 times in my life, and I am eternally grateful for everything I have learned there. Everywhere I have been able to witness its ancient spirit of science and technology. I feel privileged to have seen firsthand this wonderful creativity, the brightest of minds and the noblest of spirits. From this war-torn Asian country burst vitality that borders on the miraculous. It is in this land where such wisdom abounds that the second act of my life began. Here, in the heart of Cambridge, stands the Cambridge University Press Bookshop, which, since 1581, has been a font of academic reading materials. Over 10,000 publications are displayed in the shop, rearranged daily, the only exception being Origin of the Species and Science and Civilization in China, with a whole area assigned to them, a token of their distinguished status. Science and Civilization in China was edited by Joseph Needham, reader in biochemistry at the University of Cambridge and fellow of Gonville and Caius College. Needham had spent 3 years in the 1940s traveling across China, during which time he came to know some of China's most brilliant minds, including numerous professors from the Southwest Associated University. In China, he saw great mountains and rivers, as well as its great ancient civilization and science. At one time, the only things from China known to the West were tea, silk, and porcelain. The study of Chinese science and civilization was non-existent. This omission prompted Needham to give up his work in biochemistry so that he could put China on the map of human civilization. Everyone, including his colleagues, friends and fellow scholars, opposed his decision.
He'd already written a history of embryology, so he was a scientist and a historian, but he wasn't a sinologist, he wasn't a specialist in China. And so a number of people thought that he was not sufficiently qualified to do what he was doing.
He, Joseph, was adding a new view, a new look at these matters, which, of course, the professional scholars had not appreciated, they did not understand.
In a lot of different subjects and producing large volumes in very different areas. And they may say, how can this scholar do that?
Besides the sinologists, there was also resistance from his own college, Gonville and Caius College, whose scientists strongly advised Needham to continue his work in biochemistry and teaching.
Needham's behaviour caused a certain amount of irritation, people having to do sometimes teaching jobs that they rather thought that the reader perhaps might be doing.
Needham had developed an obsession with the wealth of resources he had found. After careful consideration, he planned to write a book with 7 chapters, focusing on application of technologies and achievements of Chinese civilization, entitled Science and Civilization in China. Amid controversy, Needham left his lab. Like a latter-day Don Quixote charging at windmills, he was not to be diverted from his formidable self-imposed mission. However, without sufficient Chinese materials or references, Needham began to realize that the task became a challenge much greater than he had expected. He couldn't help but wonder if he was really prepared to do it. Meanwhile, in China, help was at hand. The library staff of Zhejiang University were working round the clock. Zhu Kejun, president of the university, had all the university's ancient texts resorted so he could send a spare copy to Needham. Zhu had made a gentleman's agreement to help Needham 4 years previously. In 1944, Needham had met Zhu Kejun in the relocated Zhejiang University in Meitan, Guizhou province. He told Zhu Kejun about his plan, and Zhu realized what a Western professor with such talent and passion could do to immortalize Chinese civilization. It would be a milestone academically and historically. Zhu Kejun had promised he would do everything in his power to help Needham collect the necessary materials. In 1948, in the heat of the then raging civil war, a great number of wooden boxes were shipped to Cambridge University from China. 1,658 books of ancient texts, along with hopes and best wishes of Chinese academia, were delivered to Needham. As he struggled to get his project off the ground, this tremendous gift had given Needham the resources and encouragement he needed.
这间房子里面你可以看到我们图书馆所收藏的线装书，这些线装书有700种左右，大部分是李约瑟博士收藏的。帮他收集书最早最多的就是朱克正，有一些书当时不应该拿到国外去，所以朱克正跟国家领导有关官员讨论谈判了一下，说哦，这是李约瑟他在 编写一个非常重要的书，叫《中国科技史》，能不能先让他把这些书带过去？因为英国根本没有这些书，他特别特别的需要。后来就政府批准，这正好是那个寄过来的书目，17种，即1658册，本章物箱，即上海英国文化委员会
Needham eagerly browsed through these new materials. He found listed books such as Brush Talks from Dream Book by Shun Kuo, Book on Agriculture, Tao Te Ching, and to his surprise, the collection of pictures and writings, which was compiled on the order of Emperor Kangxi of the Qing Dynasty and consists of a staggering 10,000 chapters known as an Encyclopedia of Imperial China. Reading the works of great minds in ancient China, Needham felt an ecstasy as well as the weight of trust and expectation. Seeing his unbending determination, Needham's college assigned him to a temporary role as a librarian, a post he deemed ideal. Away from the biochemistry lab and the classrooms, Needham spent almost all his time in this enormous library, reading whatever he needed to, whenever he liked. One professor of engineering who worked with Needham still remembers the way his room was entirely taken up by books.
I had to knock on the door, and when he said come in, I had to open the door and creep between tightly packed bookcases. And eventually I found him sitting in a corner. And I did actually find a chair to sit on.
Besides a massive number of books, Needham had his dozens of boxes filled with over 2,000 handmade record cards. Written on each was the name and major accomplishments of a significant figure. There are ancient Chinese scientists like Sun Si Miao and Su Song, as well as intellectuals like Su Shi, even imperial concubines like Yang Yuhuan. Needham observed all these characters from a scientific perspective. On the card for Su Shi, Needham wrote, "Su Shi, great Taoist poet, alchemist, official, and engineer, friend of Shun Kuo, with whom he compiled the Su Shun Liang Feng, a book of remedies." On Yang Yuhuan, he noted, "Celebrated concubine of Li Longzhi, 6th Emperor of the Tang, famed for her beauty, with the Emperor a patron of poets and astronomers." Besides the cards, Needham had also collected academic materials in various fields in hundreds of boxes, which have been well preserved to this day.
This is our manuscript. 所以现在我们这里大概有应该有两百两百五十盒，可能一万多片文献资料，也大多数大概百分之九十是李约瑟博士自己收藏的。There
are excerpts copied from periodicals, library cards, notes and letters from scholars around the world, even chance ideas he jotted down on scraps of paper. It is like a random map of his brain. Given the sheer volume of the materials, Needham was in dire need of an assistant who was both trained in science and had the ability to read ancient Chinese texts. Wang Ling, a young historian studying at Cambridge, came to his aid, starting a partnership and a friendship that lasted for decades.
首先有王林要把这本书翻一下。 如果他在里面会发现一些有关科技史或者医疗史的记载，他会插个条，然后每天跟李约瑟博士见面，他们就会互相看看，就是一起看看那个记载啊。如果觉得是很有用的话，有可能是王林先做一个大概的翻译，然后李约瑟也会再调整。
Later, in the first volume of Science and Civilization in China, Needham expressed his gratitude to Wang Ling. Without the friendship of such a collaborator, this book would have taken much longer to produce, if indeed it would ever have been possible at all, and would have contained even more mistakes than we fear it actually does. One way to understand Needham's handling of the materials is through his mind maps.
他特别喜欢做思维导图，就是画画或者什么，用这种方式来做。比如你看，这是两块三块纸贴在一起，就做了一个相当复杂的思维导图。 它的起源地是那个韩朝的这个石盘，从这里开始，这里也从 divination 啊，各种算术的方法、术数之类的东西，然后发展到现在的围棋、象棋、指南针、落盘，这是落盘，然后这一块 讲到的算命的方式，就是八卦，就是易经之类的，最后就讲到那个扑克。
In Needham's paper, The Prenatal History of the Steam Engine, one of his mind maps demonstrates part of James Watt's machine.We can see that he traces the source back to the Aeoli file invented by Heron of Alexandria in the 1st century. Then, moving on to two branches, one theoretical guided by thermodynamics latent heat, and the other practical based on the inventions of Boyle and Papin before arriving at Watt's improved steam engine.This is Needham's mind map, or rail, as it was called by Needham's second wife, Lu Guizhen. Through sorting and reading, the text gradually came into shape along the lines of Needham's rails.First, introduction and scientific thought, followed by mathematics,physics, chemistry, and biology, on to specific applications, and then, finally, a conclusion. Every morning, Needham would leave his house at the same hour and walk through streets of Edwardian houses before jogging along the River Cam while deep in thought.Then, after passing through a meadow by the mathematical bridge, he'd arrived at his office. Like clockwork, Needham would start writing precisely 30 minutes after he left home. His sense of time was almost rigid. He resented, more than anything, unannounced visitors. He even sent away unseen his old friend Julian Huxley.
你不提前跟他约一下什么时候去看他他也可能会说不行不行我太忙了因为他确实非常非常的忙天天要干活就是读书啊写信啊还有其他方面的
Unlike most English gentlemen of his time Needham preferred typing to handwriting Almost all of his writing was done with a typewriter with just his signature handwritten.
His 大作就是中国科学技术史的一部分或者比较多的就是他用这个打字机来打出来的。
Night after night, the lights in Needham's office burned on until the morning.Controversy morphed into obscurity as he drifted further away from his established field of embryology. During his 6 years of writing, he got through at least 3 typewriters as the pages of his draft piled up. By the end of October 1951, the first 3 finished volumes came to a total of 1,575 pages.A number that far exceeded what he had anticipated. Between 1948 and 1954, Needham experienced the most trying time in his career, as his reputation steadily declined.He went from being criticized to being ignored.Even his college was beginning to have doubts, with almost no one willing to speak up for him. For 6 years, he had neither taught any classes nor published any research in his field. His unpopularity with his peers was reaching a tipping point. In 1954, Needham submitted his draft to his publisher. He had picked a strikingly significant image for the cover of his work.
这都是雷神，但是它拿着就是一个叫龟池嘛，这个它有一个锤子和钉子，你仔细细的看中国的文化和历史，你就会发现很多很多有关科学技术和医疗方面的记载。
Finally, the first volume was ready to be published. It was his answer to his critics and doubters. If it were well received, his reputation would be restored. If not, he didn't want to know. He didn't even have the nerve to stay in Cambridge. He went to a small town in France, claiming to be on vacation, while in fact hiding from possible negative reviews. Soon a friend wrote to Needham, bringing him the welcome news that Volume 1 of Science and Civilization in China had received wide acclaim. His old friends and sinologists, one after another, congratulated him in writing or in person. Among the reviews, one stated that the work showed Joseph Needham's deep reverence for the people of China, especially their genius and great contribution to mankind.
I remember reading it then with deep appreciation, when of course it was an eye-opener. It was a new approach to the subject, which had not been seen before. Here he was placing the history of China in a general context of world history and developing a new method of looking at the whole subject.
The first 5,000 copies of Volume 1 were soon sold out. During the following years, the Cambridge University Press had to replenish it on a regular basis. In 1956, Volume 2, devoted to the history of scientific thought, was published. And in 1959, Needham was elected as president of the fellows of his college.
Now, in retrospect, looking back at that, you could say that that was undoubtedly Needham's greatest achievement in science, and the department should be very proud that he was a member of the department.
Needham, who now once again enjoyed a great academic reputation, duly proposed to greatly expand the scope and contents of the project. Science and Civilization in China now emerged in multiple volumes, and by 1965, four volumes had been published, with Volume 4 at this stage appearing in two parts. Meanwhile, Needham's academic rehabilitation was complete, with him being elected as Master of Gonville and Caius in the same year. Now, with many administrative duties and given the sheer size of the Science and Civilization project that still lay ahead, it became clear that a new method of working would have to be devised. It was suggested that Needham should commission expert collaborators with specialist knowledge in each subject area to produce the new volumes, while he should then act as editor-in-chief.
It was originally going to be one volume, Cambridge University Press, assumed that it would be one or at most two volumes, And now think how many volumes it is, 25, 26, or whatever it is. So he allowed it to expand because he found more and more material as he went along.
New content material covering agriculture, military technologies, and textiles were added to the series. Needham enjoined more scholars to become part of the project, the first being an old friend. Shi Shenghan had translated Ji Min Yao Shu, or The Essential Techniques for the Welfare of the People, into English. He was then a professor of biology at Wuhan University and a renowned expert on the history of agriculture, making him an ideal candidate to write that volume. However, given the situation in the late 1960s, it was hard for any Chinese scholar to join the project. This frustration continued until 1971, when Needham was greatly saddened to hear news of Shi Shenghan's death. As a result, the volume on agriculture was postponed for more than 10 years. Needham had to find his collaborators outside China. One day, a young Cambridge graduate knocked on the door of his office. She was Francesca Bray.
When I graduated from Chinese studies, I was trying to think what I should do next. And I happened to meet Joseph Needham then, and I asked his advice. And he said, "We are just beginning the project on agriculture. Why don't you come and join us?" So I said, "Well, I don't know anything about agriculture. I don't know anything about agriculture here in England. I don't know anything at all about agriculture in China." And he said, "Well, that's okay. You can learn." So I thought, well, that's exciting. So I went to join Joseph Needham's group.
Letting a young graduate who knew nothing about agriculture write the volume dedicated to the subject was definitely going out on a limb.
I would tell him what I was planning to do. I would show him pieces that I had written. Sometimes he would make one or two suggestions about little details. But basically, I think he trusted his collaborators.
The experience had a dramatic effect on Francesca's life. Under Needham's guidance, the volume on agriculture was published in 1984. It received the Prix Bourdin from the French Academy of Sciences, bringing Francesca great reputation. Since then, she focused her studies on Chinese agriculture and handicrafts, becoming professor of social anthropology at the University of Edinburgh and the president of the Society for the History of Technology. She also acquired for herself a Chinese name, Bai Fu Lan. This is a sketch cartoon she drew of Needham in 1978. He is dressed as a Morris dancer, joyfully prancing about. Below is a limerick she wrote for him.
J is Joseph. He would always refer to himself as J or J. You'll have noticed how J's trousers taper. Well, whenever he finds a lost paper, though no sprig of a fellow, he strips off his willow and cuts a most elegant caper.
Besides his youthful admirers, Needham also recruited Nathan Sevin, an established American historian of science. Needham and Sevin had had their differences, the latter having openly criticized Needham's views. It seemed that Needham's invitation might spark more fireworks. Young scholars with different views brought new blood to the writing of the series. Among them were Timothy Brook, General Editor of History of Imperial China, published by Harvard University Press, Karine Schimler, French historian of mathematics, and the botanist Georges Metaillé. However, by recruiting so many authors, Needham was faced with a serious practical problem: money. Payment for the contributors, their expenses, and the cost of field trips to China weighed heavily. Needham had received many advances for the new volumes. Even then, funding such a long-running project was a struggle. This photo was taken in Hong Kong in 1986, when Needham, then aged 86 himself, and Lu Guizhun came to give a lecture. They were also hoping to raise some funding. Peter Lee, who helped organize the event, had long been a supporter of Needham since they first met in
1974.当我听到他对这个中国古代科技研究啊，都是自知来的，包括看书啊、写啊，都是自知来的。但我是最感动就是这一点的，一个外国人能够自知来学中文。 看古文，研究这个科技的背景，我相信21世纪还是找不到这样的人。所以这一点就是我一生对他的尊重。Moved
by Needham's commitment, Peter Lee promised to raise enough money to support the project.
So 当时我们就叫他了，我说。 捐钱去图书馆了，你让我们来负责。你千万不要跑到这么地方去，哪个地方去向人家讨捐钱的。我说我们来帮助嘛。所以76年到1995年啊，那段时间，他年纪大了，影响到他的写书，但是他的精神是非常好。
In 2018, Peter Lee, now in his 70s, came to greet guests of the Joseph Needham Symposium at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Over 40 years had passed since his meeting with Needham, but he was still keen to pursue the great man's dream. Needham's project stirred Chinese people around the world. Foundations from the US and Singapore have all made donations.
Singapore的理事基金会的董事长，这是一个非常了不起的一个老人。他就说，这个现在呀，大家都忘记了过去中国人在世界上的地位有多低。有人为我们中国说话，为我们中国人说话，他说我们应该帮助他们。所以他是一种很朴素的，他觉得旅行社做的这件事情是帮助世界更好的认识中国，所以他愿意帮助旅行社和旅行社研究所。
With his money worries laid to rest, Needham could continue to plan his epic quest. In 1978, with China launching its epochal policy of reform and opening up, Chinese students were sent to study in Britain. Soon after they arrived, a meeting was arranged between the students and Needham himself.
他拿出来大概十三卷是几册的那个书，给我们介绍，非常平易近人。但是呢，他从他的眼里也好，从他那个精神当中，透着一种真正的一种光芒。That
was when the 28-year-old Wei Li Qing knew for the first time that this Englishman had spent many decades studying Chinese culture. He was in awe, as were the other young scholars from China.
我们感到非常的崇敬，因为一个英国人花那么大的气力完成了一个这个巨著，他这个影响力是很大的。而且呢，我能看出来说，他对中国充满了爱。所以呢，我保存的那张照片上还依然写着1978年12月22日在剑桥。
见到的李约瑟。
From 1978 to his death in 1995, Needham made 4 trips to China. This footage was filmed on November the 21st, 1986, during what was to be his last visit.
Was it longer? Longer than the Great Gates. That's the one, that must be the one.
And I thought it looked sort of Edwardian indeed.
Must be the one.
The inhabitants claimed it was built as...
At 86 years old, he was still working on the volume on gunpowder. He was trying to find evidence of when firearms had first appeared in China. He had seen historical records of bottle-shaped guns in the West, dating back to 1327. Similar arms in China were speculated to have appeared during the Song Dynasty.Visiting the Dazhou rock carvings near Chongqing, which date from the 12th century, he found images providing the clarification he required. In 1987, the volume on gunpowder was published.Now that the first 6 volumes of Science and Civilization in China, totaling 15 books, had been completed, Needham shifted his energy onto the last part. On this desk, stacked with books, Needham started his final work, which, according to his plan, would contain 27 books in 7 volumes.In 1994, Military Technology was published. By then, 46 years had passed since he started writing. This was going to be the last book he saw published.
李约瑟先生曾经跟他的最好的一个朋友 Kenneth Robinson 说过，他说呢，这个我很希望。啊，有那么一刻，我跟你一起能够看到这本书的这个出版，看到了这艘船，就这套丛书安全的进港，而且呢，我相信这一天必将到来。
During his lifetime, Joseph Needham, with incredible perseverance, finished the writing of 15 books. A dozen or more were still due to be written.
Well, I think wants to learn most from him is the whole development of human thought, to which he has contributed in a way that nobody else has. In the academic thought in the West has not yet taken in, it has not yet realized that with a Western civilization, there also was.At the same time, an Eastern civilization of the same sort of strength. And his contribution has been to try and open people's eyes.
Some might say that it was from then on that the West started to view the East in a different perspective. Perhaps that was his greatest achievement.
Joseph was a brilliant person.At building bridges, not just between China and the West, but also between science and humanities, and being able to transcend borders, cross borders. That was a great gift.
In China today, people have not forgotten an English scholar named Joseph Needham.Who spent most of his life connecting the West and the East. Since the writing of Volume 1 of the monograph in 1948, 47 years of Needham's life were tied to this work. he had started collecting materials even earlier. Suffice to say, his accomplishments and life story, as well as his intellectual legacy, were all included in this magnum opus. It is not only a wealth for Chinese civilization, but also an essential part of human civilization. Joseph Needham's vision, determination, and groundbreaking work will continue to inspire scholars East and West for generations to come.